We have the cultural zeitgeist.
Right now, you're doing something for the culture.
Oh, baby.
Do it for the culture.
For the culture.
Do it, do it. Do it a little slower. Like.
I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
I know it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
That's the anthem. Get your damn hands up. I do this for my culture.
Joe, warn the Chiefs.
Ohms. Ohms.
Ohms. Ohms.
I don't know.
I think we've really penetrated the cultural zeitgeist.
Yes, we have. Cultural Zeitgeist on 104.3 The Score. We're here for you on FM. You made the switch, shouldn't you? So, it's Olympic season, it's Valentine's Day, some Olympic stuff here. Without dealing with the Norwegian guy who announced after his bronze medal that he had cheated on his girlfriend before the Olympics. Telling her before the Olympics. I mean, come on. He's got to know Olympics have always been about sex. Ask anyone who's ever been in the athlete's village. Any village, frankly. They put boxes and boxes of free condoms in the lobby. They do. And it's not for water balloons, kids. And there has been so much sex in Italy. So much sex in Milano and Cortina and every other mountain village, everything else. They ran out of the 10,000 free condoms the organizers provided. No lie. True fact. They ran out of the 10,000 free condoms after 3 days of the games. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. Like, have you never hosted an Olympic before? Italy's done this. Cortina's done this. Seriously, don't you know that's what happens? Get these 20-something athletes in the greatest shape of their life and everything. All these pheromones are flying and everything else is. And seriously, Paris knew what it was doing. Paris, 2024. They were laying out 300,000 condoms. You didn't hear anything about running out there, did you? Nope. So in Italy, when they ran out of condoms, they're waiting for a replacement batch to arrive. Clip and save. Mark this tape, Tyler. Baby T. Mark. The 2042 and 2046 games will be dominated by Olympic super babies. In 1998, the first Olympics games I covered, they were in Nagano, the Winter Olympics. Go to the media tower, and there in the media lobby is this massive cardboard box of condoms for the media. You really don't want to sleep with any members of the media. But they were there anyways. Should you drink enough sake, they were there. Now, the thing about them was they put the four Japanese mascots, the four mascots for the Nagano Games, on the packaging of the condoms. Wow, this is cute. I like this. So I took a handful and brought them home with me. My daughter, the diva, was not quite 10. My son, power-hitting right-handed hitter, was not quite 8. And I thought, well, look, here's cartoon characters to help explain, help grease the talk. This might make it easier. You think I'm kidding, people? I did this. And we brought them into the bedroom and brought out the condoms. Look here, they're colorfully decorated with mascots from the Olympics. And I had asked them to go get a banana from downstairs. You're going to learn. You're going to learn. So that's what we went through with Olympic. The birds and the bees, we taught them the facts of life. We taught them protection with Olympic condoms. Condoms provided by the Nagano organizers with the mascots on the cover of the condoms. And they're out of them in Italy. I don't have any left over. Sorry, people. All right, so Le'Veon Bell had some thoughts on the Olympics. Talking about, you've seen the televised sports. There's the luge. There's the skeleton. And there's that two-man sled thing that looks like sex. I don't know what it is. Do you watch the Winter Olympics, baby T?
Two-man sled.
It's like one's lying on his back on top of the other one. And I don't know what that's called.
No, not off the top of my head either.
So then there's alpine stuff, which has its own problems with genitalia controversy. And there's freestyling. And think about it. All those events that you watch. Le'Veon Bell said, Winter Olympic sports seem like a bunch of dares that just escalated over time. That is great. That's, you watch these guys on the luge, you watch them on skeleton. Okay. Philipp Raimund, he's a German ski jumper. He had never won an individual World Cup title, never competed at the Olympics, and he pulled out of a competition in March. Citing a fear of heights. He's a ski jumper. He had a fear of heights. I don't know how he got that far in the first place, but on Monday he won the gold medal. A ski jumper with acrophobia. That's why we watch. You get stories like this, you get accomplishments like this. There he was at the top of the... I suppose he didn't have acrophobia standing on top of the medal stand. Did a nice job, and he got his medals. Oh, by the way, speaking of those medals, the athletes are losing them because of lousy craftsmanship. The craftsmanship sucks, which is why we're talking about it on Saturday Suckage. It seems that this week, after the awarding of medals, the medals were detaching from the ribbons. With just the slightest bit of jostling. And there are pictures, there's video, there's evidence that medal winners have lost their medals because they're falling off. This is not the first time we've seen medal problems with the medals at the Olympics. Like the whole, that's the object of the exercise, besides the corruption that goes on with the Olympics. But in Paris 2 summers ago, they lost their shine. The medals lost their shine. The varnish started to degrade. Hundreds and hundreds of medals saw the varnish degrade on this goal that all these athletes have. Your Olympics, higher, stronger, crappier. Speaking of crappier, the NHL is back at the Olympics. 12-year absence. The NHL is trying to grow the game, which has always been stupid since it doesn't know how to grow the game. And hockey has already grown in Europe. It's grown far more everywhere else in the world than it has here. But anyway, the United Kachucks of America and Canada and the best of the world are, except the Russians, because the Russians cheat. They're all at the games. The NHL season's interrupted, which I hate. They're trying to act like they're a team playing together for the pageantry and for whatever they believe. I mean, the NHL did not know how to capitalize on a miracle on ice. So why now? And this just gets better. If you're in it for the stupid. The Olympics are being broadcast on NBC or NBC family, including Peacock. And the NHL is prevented from showing highlights by NBC. NBC says, no, you can't show highlights. So the league is shut down, a three-week break in the middle of the season. Great players, the best in the world, are wearing their country's colors. And the NHL, which is sacrificing this and bringing this kind of greatness to the games, the NHL can't post, say, that spectacular tic-tac-toe and tic-tac-toe again passing that Canada showed against Czechia. So here's what the NHL's website is doing. I love this. The NHL's website has somebody using MS Paint to animate stuff from the games. Think Patrick Finley of the Sun-Times. Perhaps you remember a couple training camps when the Bears have their precious double secret probation rules about reporting. Don't write anything we do. You can't do that. You can't say anything and you saw it. No. So what Patrick Finley did, inevitably, he drew on his notepad just delightful pictures of big plays, complete with footballs. It didn't fit the size, and arrows pointing where the ball was going, and outline of a fan cheering, yay. It was, the NHL is using MS Paint and doing something like that. Imagine Lego blocks with Terrence and Phillip from South Park. It's really hysterical to look at. And the Olympics have, and NBC are shameless. They're just, they don't care. There's a IAHF and part of the Olympics. If the NHL says, look, we can't use highlights, we stop our league, and you won't let us use highlights of the guys we're sending, we're not going to send our guys anymore. It gives the Olympics credibility. I don't think the NHL needs to shut down for this, and I don't think it's worth it. And you're going to get guy, Kevin Fiala of the Kings got injured. Guys always get hurt playing in these games. Oh, I'm playing for my country. That's great. Your country's not the one paying you all those millions of dollars, and the country's not going to award a Stanley Cup. I've hated this from the start. There have been some great moments. There'll be never be a greater moment than the Miracle on Ice, which was college kids. There have been spectacular Sidney Crosby scoring the golden goal in overtime. I mean, U.S.-Canada in the finals. Those are great games because we know the players, we know the country, the power, but guys are going to get hurt. So there's the NHL mocking the Olympics, using MS Paint as highlights, and it looks like Terrence and Phillips playing hockey. Terrence and Phillip from South Park. It's a stitch. And I will bet the NHL still has not learned its lesson. Baby T, staying with the Olympics. Do you know who Chloe Kim is?
Yes, I have heard of Chloe Kim.
Okay, tell me. What does she do? What's her sport? She has a winter sport. I'm narrowing it down for you.
Okay, I know who she is. I just don't know what sport she's in, but I've heard the name.
She's a snowboarder. Okay.
Got it.
I had no idea. She was one of the biggest U.S. snowboarding names. I had no idea that she was dating Myles Garrett. You know who Myles Garrett is, right?
The best pass rusher in the NFL.
There you go. And I had no idea if that would have an effect, what it would mean. Like, we had Jonathan Owens on the Bears, right? Bears safety special teamer, great, here. Married to Simone Biles. She's got all the medals from the summer game. She got all of them. She's a spectacular athlete. She's a wonderful story. She's redemption. She's great. And Jonathan Owens had his moments, and he was playing. Bears kept getting injured. Jonathan Owens kept showing up, and there you go. So I had no idea. Myles Garrett, right, he set the sack record, right, while he was dating Chloe Kim. So how did it work out for Chloe Kim? And I never thought about it until blogger Danny Neckel pointed it out this way. In 2018, Chloe Kim, U.S. snowboarder, won the gold medal. In 2022, Chloe Kim, U.S. snowboarder, won the gold medal. In 2025, she starts dating a Cleveland Brown. In 2026, she only won the silver medal. Dating a Cleveland Brown brought her medal cash down. I don't think there's a metric for that, but it's simply a fact. She started dating a Cleveland Brown and she didn't do as well in the Olympics. What does that tell you?
Like maybe the best Cleveland Brown of all time outside of Jim Brown.
Yeah. Okay. And once again, I want to repeat this. I do this every Olympics, summer, winter, and it came up. People forget it. That's why I have to keep reminding them. Nothing that is judged is a sport. It's a hobby. Nothing that comes down to the French judge should ever be considered more than an exhibition. Anything that's judged is a hobby. And you're going to say, well, boxing's judged. That's a sport. No, not the way they do that. Boxing, true boxing, you fight until somebody's knocked out. I don't want to know what a judge says. Judges can be bought. They can be biased. Nothing that's judged is a sport. Ice skating is beautiful. It's a hobby. And finally, in the Saturday Suckage Olympic report, there's this from a gentleman named Jarvis Best, whose Twitter bio describes him thusly: writer, painter, poet, gentleman of culture. And it goes like this. Olympic skiers are like, quote, I have 2% body fat. I train 23 hours a day. I have had 87 surgeries. And Olympic snowboarders are like, I have smoked this many drugs today. And they hold up their hand, which is a mitten.
Did the Wake and Bake Club sneak in the cultural zeitgeist? What's going on here?
When you're talking snowboarders, Olympic snowboarders are like, I have smoked this many drugs today, and they hold up their hand, which is an A-mitten. And by the way, when you talk about that, skiers, snowboarders, NBA players, they're the ones who say, man, I played 20 minutes last night. I can't play tonight. We got load management. I can't play. Oh, my God. All right. So take a break. We got some bear stuff. We got some draft stuff. And before the end of the show, we'll have Michael Jordan stuff. Sure, why not? I'm Steve Rosenblum. This is Saturday Suckage. 104.3 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on The Score. Here's your host, Steve Rosenblum.
Welcome and welcome back, Saturday Suckage. I'm Steve Rosenblum on 104.3 The Score. So, you got a phone call, Tyler, from Alex Kuhn of the Grand Almighty executive producer of the afternoon show.
Yeah, during that last Olympic segment here, got a text from the great Alex Kuhn. With the assist on the Olympic event, you were confusing, as was I, the name of. It is called the Two-Man Luge, in case you were wondering.
The one that just looks like sex.
Yes.
Right.
Two-Man Luge.
Two-Man Luge. And Alex was listening. The greatest part of my audience, it turns out, are producers from The Score. Because I guess, is it a thing? Tyler, you guys have no life, so you listen to the show? Is that how it works?
I mean, I have a life, but of course I'm listening. Wow. If I'm not out of here.
Is that a little crazy? Okay. And we had one response on the text line to your solving your Valentine-less day?
Yes. Shall I read it to the air?
Can you put it together? I know it came in four tapes.
I can put it together. So, Rosie, if you want to make fun of me here.
I don't. Okay. I want to share what the audience has said to you. So let's share it with the rest.
I feel guilty because this lady is already married, but I feel bad, but she's offering, I guess.
Nobody on her side of the text seems bothered by that, Tyler.
Hey, Tyler, I am a 72-year-old slightly overweight woman who loves Saturday suckage. Let me ask my husband of 52 years if he is okay with me going out with you. He's fine with it. See you later. From the 708.
Congratulations. Congratulations, Tyler. Look at that baby tee.
Yeah, I guess.
Getting cougared.
I'm moving up in the world, I guess.
Getting cougared, yeah. Congratulations. All right. I love this account, the Captain Caleb S. Williams Twitter account. I just haven't been able to get to it last couple of weeks for whatever reason. And this was the season-ending communication. Mother, we have lost the battle, but the war will wage as long as I manage this post of Chicago. Defeat may visit us, but it shall not remain. This too shall pass. Signed, CW. I like that. Continue next. Next year should be great. I love that. So, you know, who's the best known or greatest Bears fan, Tyler? Baby T? Do you have any thoughts on this? We have certain celebrities associated with Bears. At one time, Paris Hilton was associated as a Bears fan. We had Bill Murray, every Chicago team, see him on the sidelines. But Ashton Kutcher has been, I don't want to say he's a secret Bears fan. He's been a Bears fan. He's been, like, he talks to Ryan Poles, apparently. And he had posted this after the game against the Rams. A win would have been nice, but it was still the greatest night of my football life. It's the moment that I will always remember when the real reason for football clicked in. Football isn't just a game played with a ball on a field. It's not just 3D chess with men colliding. It's human connection. It's family genetics. It's an allegiance passed from generation to generation. Ashton Kutcher continues to write, I witnessed my son standing in the same place that I stand, screaming at a black square with color pixels for an orange and blue team, as if somehow his cries could affect the outcome of the game. Last night was the night that I knew I had done my real job as a Bears fan. I passed the game to the next generation. I shared a forever loyalty. He is fully on his way on a lifetime journey, highs and lows, love and loss, passion and grit, strategy and might, joy and disappointment. And when the day comes where my son and I are at an impasse, we can always talk about the Bears. Ashton Kutcher, longtime Bears fan. There you go. It's outstanding. There is a Twitter site called NFL Memes. We love memes. Memes, the hot thing. This Twitter site tweeted out, the haters said the Patriots were frauds and couldn't do it. They were correct. Honestly, great call by the haters.
NFL Memes is a great account.
It is wonderful. That's it. They were correct, honestly. Great call by the haters. And then you talk about rubbing it in. Jack Andrade, senior manager of research at the NFL for the NFL Network and NFL Media. Remember, the Seahawks were playing in the stadium of their rival 49ers. So the NFL Network and NFL Media senior manager tweeted out, the Seahawks defense had more sacks and takeaways in two games at Levi's Stadium this season than the 49ers did in their eight home games combined. The Seahawks defense had 9 sacks combined at Levi's Stadium. The 49ers had 7 sacks. in games in Levi's Stadium where they're a visitor, or at least neutral. The Seahawks had 4 takeaways. The Niners, who play their home games there, had only 3 takeaways.
Have you heard the stat that since Mike McDonald took over last year, they have only 2 losses in road games? They call themselves the Road Warriors.
That's a good name. That'll work. Now, see, there was a clash because by default, Mike Vrabel showed that apparently they're out of the film. They didn't get the film they wanted. He showed them the Warriors. He showed his Patriots the Warriors, and that started the season somewhere in training camp or exhibition, wherever it was, start the season with the Warriors. So now you're talking about the Road Warriors. So we got quite the turf battle here, don't we? I was not aware of that statistic, but Mike McDonald would seem to have, he would own all the statistics now, wouldn't he? And he's owning the Niners on their own field. On top of that, Kenneth Walker III, the MVP in the Super Bowl, really, they should have given it to the entire Seattle defense. Don't try to put a face on it. We know what the difference in that game is. The most valuable thing in that game was the Niners defense. Kenneth Walker III, who was the MVP, had more runs of 20-plus yards in Levi's Stadium than the entire San Francisco team did in that stadium in the 8 home games they played. Wow. So does this make Kyle Shanahan even greater of genius when you have these team that never shows up there doing better than you on your field? I don't know. Does he? Wow, he did all that, and there they were. We spent a lot of time right after the Bears ended the Packers season. We get wrapped up in Packers hate and Packers schadenfreude, and that's okay. That's a worthy pursuit. You know what? I would recommend that as one of your 4 major food groups. But then you have former Lion and Packer T.J. Lang firing a shot at the Vikings. T.J. Lang is a really good follow. Follow him on Twitter. He fired this off after the Super Bowl was won by Sam Darnold's team. As I get ready for bed, I was going to be a jerk and ask Vikings fans how they feel right now, but I won't do that. I won't ask what it feels like to not bring back a 14-win quarterback who just won the Super Bowl. That would be a low blow, and I will not ask that question. I love you, TJ Lang. And as long as we're doing Packers schadenfreude, let's do some more. There's an account that calls itself Titletown Talks. Describes itself as the unofficial voice for all Packers fans. And it posted this: regular season wins since 2011. New England, 158. 5 Super Bowl appearances. Regular season wins since 2011. Kansas City, 158. 6 Super Bowl appearances. Regular season wins since 2011. Green Bay, 155. 0 Super Bowl appearances. Regular season wins since 2011, Seattle, 154, 3 Super Bowl appearances. The website Titletown Talks goes on. Do you know how hard it is to win that much and not reach the Super Bowl? This is an organizational failure. But in Titletown, right? Don't you love it when the Packer fans, Packer followers, Packer outlets are just cannibalizing their management, their fan, they're beating up on them. It's like, we went through this. We saw Bear fans just destroyed Bears management, Bears ownership, Bears players, Bears coaches. Isn't it great to see that up there?
Well, and guess what, Titletown? They got contract extensions.
Yes, they did. Keep them there. There you go. One guy who didn't, he got a new deal altogether. The Dolphins hired former Packers defensive coordinator Jeff Hafley. And do you know when they did this, Baby T? Do you know what the Dolphins did? They hired Jeff Hafley, after his defense choked two games in the fourth quarter and overtime against Jeff Hafley's team's greatest rival. Once in the playoffs to kill their season, once in the regular season, some of the greatest plays ever made by the Bears, where the Packers led for 57, 58, whatever number of minutes you needed them to lead by, they did. And Jeff Hafley's defense choked. It killed their season. What does this remind you of, Baby T? Do you see something similar here in the hiring of a coach? I'm going to give you a hint. His initials are Matt Nagy. The Bears hired Matt Nagy as soon as his play calling choked the Chiefs' season. He showed he couldn't call plays. The Chiefs, better personnel, better players, better coach standing next to him, choked a playoff game. And the Bears couldn't wait to hire this guy. And what happened? Well, as it turns out, he couldn't really... You know what? He never could coach the game in front of him. Never did that. His play calling choked a season. The Bears hired him. The Packer, Jeff Hafley's defense choked a season. The Dolphins couldn't wait to hire him. And Packers fans know what... Well, they're angry at him. One Packers fan tweeted, as congratulations for Jeff Hafley getting that head coaching job, we should give him Rashawn Gary, Keyshawn Nixon, and Brandon McManus as a present. We will even throw in Rich Bisaccia as a surprise. You're welcome, Jeff. How about that? That's awesome. I just can't get enough of this. I love the whole idea that the Packers are, because they can't do it to Bears fans now, right? There's at least for 1 year, right? For the next year, they can't do it.
Well, I was going to say that the whole excuse too of Micah Parsons being out. I mean,
it's just a legitimate point, but they act like they're the only team with injuries.
Exactly. Like the Bears started the season with a non-healthy defense and played the whole season with a non-healthy defense.
They played and won games without linebackers.
Yeah. DeMarco Jackson, number one linebacker against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
And he earned it. There was the depth was there, and that's what you do. Rashawn Gary was the greatest choker of all. He was the what a waste. And Keyshawn Nixon, you know, the idea, the NFL wants to be able to call penalties after a play on which there were no flags. It wants to use review for that. Do you think they would have ejected Keyshawn Gary for the cheap shot on DJ Moore?
I definitely think there was reason to throw the flag and a potential ejection. Absolutely.
Yeah. He's just a punk. He's a big mouth punk. Now, some of them can be delightful. Now, the fact that they were on the other team and this cheap shot artist and this big mouth. Yeah, I want the Bears. I want the Bears. Yeah, bring them down. Yeah, we're happy. We want the Bears. Glad we got the Bears in the playoffs.
Christian Watson, too.
We got the Bears. How'd that work out for you, Keyshawn? How'd that work out for you personally, Keyshawn? Yeah, it's good. I would want. That was just such a dirty hit on DJ Moore. And I would hope that NFL, if they go to this, they enact this, and they make it, they give them a lot of latitude. You find something on film. I love that. Because that's the only way you're going to police these kind of cheap shots. And get this punk out of there. I'm glad Packers fans hate the guy that Bears fans would hate. Like, is he the most hated Packer? Is there a Packer you really hate? He's it.
Yeah.
Right?
He is the villain, no question.
Okay. 269 texter. Oh, 260. Baby T, that invitation sounds like a great night. She sounds fun.
Backup.
take a break. We have, there's something I came across, because the Bulls suck. And you know what? They even suck at sucking. Like, everybody else knows how to tank. The Bulls don't know how to tank. They didn't get fined, but the Bulls suck at sucking. This is no time to suck. Everybody else is beating you to it. And whatever amount of money you're going to pay, getting the best player in the draft will more than pay for itself. But AK sucks. But there was something else that came up with the Bulls. And it was good stuff. And it was Michael Jordan and the 93 finals. And there's some wonderful stories about that. One most notably, because Charles Barkley was bopping around Cubs camp, right? He was in Cubs camp and Arizona, played for the Suns. He was on that 93 team. And before the series started, Bernie Lincecum of the Tribune had written that Paul Westhead was like the designated driver of a crazy bus with all these players. Well-tanned Dan Marley and Barkley, the loudest and loud mound of rebound. And all of what was, Kevin Johnson was on that team. And all that the Suns offered. And he characterized Paul Westhead as a designated driver. And they ran the piece in Phoenix, in the Arizona Republic. And nobody in Phoenix could see normal kind of sports criticism. They don't have that there, apparently. So, Charles Barkley is doing the day before the game, the day before the series press conference and his lectern. And he walks off, and I'm standing in the back with Bernie, and Charles Barkley walks by. Bernie's picture was run with the column. Bernie was a man of stark white hair. And Charles Barkley says, "What's your name?" And Bernie sticks out his hand. He says, "Bernie Lincecum, what's yours?" Outstanding. Just the thought of that, that response. And Barkley just started laughing, shaking his head, and just walked away.
The round mound of rebound, don't you know?
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a break when we come back. Something I heard this week that I wanted to share was a happy note, some happy audio to share with you, Bulls fans, because there's nothing good to share with you, Bulls fans. I'm Steve Rosenblum. This is Saturday Suckage. 104.3 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on The Score. Here's your host, Steve Rosenblum.
Hey, I know him. Welcome in, welcome back. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. 104.3 The Score. As we now know, because we're bitching. We're on FM. We're bitching, dude. Hey there, guys and gals, wakers and bakers, loadies and loaders. So I heard this week. One of the best series I covered was 93 Finals. It was the Bulls and the Suns. I remember talking with Jordan. Suns came into town in March, and they're just all hepped up to play the Bulls in March. Bulls are two-time champions. Here are the Suns, best record in the NBA. Here's Barkley, and he's all part of that. He's leading the parade, and Suns have a good team. KJ, Marley, they got a good team. I think Oliver Miller might have been on that team. And somebody once shouted at Oliver Miller, "Hey, Miller, you're the..." Because Oliver Miller was girthsome. He would have been ripe for an Ozempic ad. He was a large man. He was the buffet's worst nightmare. Somebody once yelled, "Hey, Miller, you're the two worst players on that team." I was a fan. It was great. Anyways, that series had twists and turns. Bulls looked like they were going to win it in the stadium, win it at home. Game five was at the stadium on a Friday night. Suns won. And Charles Barkley in the post games, because Chicago had been destroyed when the Bulls won titles. City got lit on fire and windows broken and everything. And Charles Barkley was like, "Well, I was walking down Michigan Avenue today. And boarded up, all the windows boarded up. I thought I was back in the hood. We saved the city, Chicago. We won the game, we saved the city." And then he played game six. And Kevin Johnson was on the 520 podcast talking about that game, Michael Jordan, the Bulls, and trying to win an NBA title.
We fly in from Phoenix to Chicago, and I fall asleep on the plane, and then the head coach wakes me up, right? And he says, hey, I just want to let you know, man, game three is going to be your game. I said, cool. You know, I believe that. I'm going to have to bounce back. Yeah. He's like, and you guard Michael Jordan.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, we 0-2. We down 0-2. Our best player is getting scorched like we all did. And now you're going to put me, who had a rough two games, on Michael Jordan, right? So I go back to sleep. Plane land. I wake up. I'm like, damn, I had a nightmare. I was like, man, I thought the coach came and told me. I guard my team. We walking out the plane. The coach is right there. And I'm like, man, I had this dream that you came and woke me up and told me you guard Michael Jordan. He said, you are.
Wow.
God is my witness. I get on team bus. We take it from the airport. We staying at the hotel downtown Chicago. I get off the bus. I tell the equipment man to take my bags. I see a church across the street. I walk straight in that church, and I sit in the front row, and I'm like, Jesus, I don't believe in you no more. There's no way, if you loved me and died on the cross and did all the things, you would be having me guard Michael Jordan.
First of all,
real talk right there. Hold on.
Yeah. Why did you even get in the church?
You know, the church door was open. A lot of the doors are
always open, brother.
Yeah. You obviously don't. No, I'm just kidding. Church doors open often during the weekday, depending on where you are.
His nickname is I can't believe it.
That's crazy.
So I get in the front row, and I'm doing all
Chicago
this.
Chicago church, too.
And I lost my faith at that point, clearly. So we go to game three, and then this is how it becomes real. You know when you're in the locker room, and they put the names up. So they put in who guarding Scottie Pippen, and who guarding, you know, all these different players. Mm-hmm. And I was like, please don't put my name. They said, Michael Jordan, KJ. I was like, You fast forward. We had to circle, you know, where you're about to jump ball, and I'm next to Jordan. So now at this point, it's fight or flight, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm guarding you tonight. He was like, huh? I was like, yeah, I'm guarding you tonight. They threw the ball. I hit him. I'm scared as heck, right? But I got to do something. Like, I got to at least try to get in his head a little bit. We end up winning the game three. It was a triple overtime game.
Yeah.
Mm. I played every minute in the game. NBA rec finals record, most minutes ever played. We won that game. We win 2 out of 3 in Chicago, because back then it was a 2-3-2. We win 2 out of 3 in Chicago. So, you know, it worked out. So by the end of the series, I guarded the whole series. So when people ask me, how'd you do? I'm like, I held him under his average. And then somebody asked me, well, what was his average? I'm like, well, Dan Marley, he averaged 44.
Yeah, I was so for that.
He has 44. He has 44 against Dan Marley. Then they're like, well, what did he average against you? 42. But I kept him under his average. Like, that real talk. Yeah, take that, Mike.
That's crazy.
I sort of said, I set that up wrongly. I apologize. I thought it was leading up to the game six stuff, but it was game three after the Bears had won first two games in Phoenix. The Suns had no idea how to win a series. They didn't know they could lose it in the first quarter of game one, and they did. And then game six in Phoenix, Michael Jordan scored 12 points, and John Paxson hit the three because Horace Grant was too afraid to try to make a layup. He was so afraid. He was horrible that series offensively, and he threw the ball out to Pax, and Pax hit the three. And there's your three, Pete. Thank you for listening. Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage. If nobody important listened, I'll be back next week. We are 104.3, The Score.
It wouldn't have been possible if we weren't here to be told how much we suck. So, kudos to you guys for sucking as bad as we do.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.